Hi, today is February 9th, 2020. This is Movie Was Podcast number 317. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall. Kind of got a mixed bag of stuff to talk about today, including I'm going to get one-on-one help from John on an app.
Okay.
Because I don't get it. Okay, first off, I wanted to mention, I don't think either John nor I claim to be epidemiologists, but like most people, we've been following the coronavirus in China, and one of the sad facts about it is that it's not just, I shouldn't say just, I mean, aside from horror to the people, the residents in that area, it's affecting us indirectly, I guess, tech people. You know, a lot of our tech comes from China, and so production is being affected in that area, including Tesla. So, I was just thinking, just a few weeks ago, you and I were speculating on when the new iPads might appear, and, iPads are made in China along with all the other Apple stuff, except for the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Except for the Mac Pro. I think everything's made in China. So, yeah, iPod, iPads, iPhones, not iPod, AirPod, I guess, and Teslas. Apparently, the Tesla has been delayed. The Tesla 3 has been delayed, and I suspect a bunch of other stuff because of it, so... if your favorite new toy doesn't make an appearance on a timely basis, there's a really good reason for that. So just thought I'd mention that. There's a good article in Verge.
I think it's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens with things that we know are on a regular release schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So iPhones, for example.
Yep.
Is this going to throw that off? Are we going to see a more lackluster development? Or will Apple, do something unique? I could even see if they were going to hold off a year on something, moving straight into new production on something, and in some weird random way we get a feature earlier than was expected.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to miss the when we used to talk about TikTok,
right?
It doesn't seem like that's really the case anymore. But if you were going to miss the talk, you might skip the tick and go straight to the next talk or something. Yep. Like that to, basically... otherwise, you're going to be behind the competition. So if Apple has been thinking, well, do we need to release that feature in 2010, or not 2010, wow, I'm really far back, 2020, or can we wait till 2021 when it's
right.
Perfect? It might be, if they don't hit the September release for iPhones, for example, it might be an iPhone release in November.
Right, or they
November, may... that is accelerated from 2021.
Yeah, or they might have to do something radical, like release some super duper feature on existing phones and iPads because they won't be able to do the production runs that they expected to do.
Yeah, that's true. So this could, hopefully it's stabilizing out. I know the media reported yesterday was the lowest number of confirmed deaths since I guess about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe only a week ago, but still, maybe we're on a containment now, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, one can only hope, because I think I mentioned last week, there's, a University of Hong Kong study published in The Lancet that said the number of cases, not number of fatalities, but number of cases was doubling every 6.4 days or something. And, if you're a concrete thinker and you think this is never going to level off... basically, the whole world will be infected in 4 months, but, that's probably not true.
Well, and we also know that the numbers coming out of China that are being officially released may not be 100% accurate, simply because there's been speculation that statistically, if you were to apply statistical models of growth, that's not what we're seeing in terms of the reported numbers.
Right.
So either it's not as bad as we thought, or it's worse and the numbers are not reflecting that. So
right.
I guess we'll just continue to have to wait and see.
Yep. Okay, on to happier news. Google Maps is turning 15, so happy birthday, Google Maps. And I don't know about you, John, but I was rather startled to see the icon change dramatically this past week.
I looked at it one day and went, wait a minute, that's not the Maps icon.
What is that thing?
And, you know, it's interesting because on an iPhone, I typically, when I see an app icon change, no matter how drastic of a change, and this was a pretty drastic one,
yeah,
I typically think, well, okay, they changed it. Whereas when I was on Android, and still to some extent with Android, because the security model is a little bit looser, I worry when I see something like that, was this an actual change or did something hijack my device and load some, you know, version of Google Maps where all of a sudden every time I search for McDonald's, I'm going to be routed to the nearest Wendy's or something like that.
Whoever, right.
The, you know, the hijack. But no, it was very startling. Although I opened up the app and I really don't see much of a difference in the iOS app.
So if you look at the bottom, I think it's slightly different. I think the, you know, I don't really remember what it used to look like, to be honest. But if you look at the bottom, there are three icons there, Explore, Commute, and For You. I think they were different before the update. And I'm just going to kind of look at the Maps article in blog.google, I should say. So let's see. Starting today, see updated apps app on Android and iOS with five. He says five easy access tabs, but I only see three. So maybe in landscape mode, there's five. Nope, still three.
I'm looking at it. The funnier thing about it is these three tabs. I've never used any of them. Like Explore is always the default, so
right.
I guess I've used that in the past.
Right.
I've never touched on For You until this very moment, and it really doesn't give me much. And Commute, for me, is like laughable. So I'm
you walk, right?
Todd, what my commute screen looks like.
Yeah.
But it's basically telling me that I have a 3-minute commute by drive, and it's about a 50-minute commute to walk. So, yeah, I guess that's why I've never used that button.
Well, you know, I don't know if that button existed until now. I think it's new. I think that's one of the new things. But I'm going to use it every day, and this is the reason why. So, no, as far as I know, I do not have a cognitive deficit problem yet. And I can remember how to get to my parking structure every morning and come back every night. The problem is, because of the horrible, horrible traffic here in Honolulu, I don't always take the same path. And not because, you know, and I basically depend on Google Maps to tell me when I need to reroute. And this time of the year, I have to reroute almost every day. And the rerouting is not always the same. It has rerouted me through different streets on different days based on the, you know, type of traffic issues that were going on. So, and I think it is actually a little faster. So, any rate, so Google claims they've freshened up the apps in both Android and iOS. And they say there are five, but I only see three. Explore, Commute, Saved, which I do not see. It might be somewhere else. Saved, and Contribute, which I also do not see. Updates. There's also supposed to be Updates tab. Maybe that's... Oh, you know what? You know, I'm looking at the sample screen. I should check on my Android device. Maybe my Android device looks... Maybe the iOS hasn't quite caught up. Well, let's looky. Okay, Google, Maps, and nope. I only have three icons at the bottom of my Android screen. So, the article says there should be Explore, Commute, For You. Explore, Commute, which we see. Then it says supposed to be Saved, Contribute, and something, and Updates. So I guess maybe I don't have a fully updated app. Only the icons change? I'm not sure. I am not sure now. But according to the screenshot, and the screenshot is of an Android device of some sort, probably some kind of Pixel. Let me look at my Pixel. Yeah, it's a Pixel of some sort, although it's different from mine. I have a Pixel 3a. Does show five tabs at the bottom. So there you go. Well, anyway, happy birthday, Google Maps. I use you much more than I probably... should, because traffic is so terrible here.
Well, and Google Maps is one of those Google products that I think we forget didn't exist at one time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like YouTube and Gmail.
Yes.
I think I sort of remember a time before Gmail. It's really hard to remember a time before YouTube, and a time before Google Maps, and for that matter, a time before Wikipedia. Those all, you know, in that same 3 or 4 year period of time in the thousands, we got Wikipedia, we got Google Maps, we got Google, we got YouTube. It is really crazy to think about life without those. Even though I have Apple Maps and Google Maps on my phone, I use both a little bit, maybe Google Maps a little more. But it's just crazy to think there wasn't a time where you could open up a little device on your hand and it would tell you exactly where you were and how to get somewhere and all that.
You know, in fact, it's funny you say that because, you know, I've been trying to clean up my home a bit. And I use that term loosely because, you know, it's, you know, we vacuum and all that. But I mean, you know, kind of get rid of some of the junk I've accumulated over the decades. And one of the things I found today was a CD-ROM, if you remember what that is. A CD-ROM of the Microsoft Streets and Trips Maps product.
Yep.
You know, there was a time that if you wanted a map, you would have to put in a CD and, you know, manually print it out and take a piece of paper with you. Or if you were lucky enough, you had a notebook that you're carrying with you or a Windows phone that you could transfer the file to over a cable. You know?
Well, and we forget. So in the dark ages of 1999... when I wasn't partying like it was 99, but I was trying to get somewhere. Yeah. I'll never forget the first time I went to visit my soon-to-be, you know, wife. You know, we were first dating. And Google Maps wasn't a thing.
Nope. Google wasn't
really
a thing.
So what, yeah, MapQuest was
MapQuest,
what I used.
Yeah.
And MapQuest couldn't find her house. The maps weren't that good, and so I could get to the main highway that ran through the town she lives next to, and then I had an email from her that was a paragraph of directions from the stoplight. It's like, okay, you see this stoplight, now turn right, keep going until you pass this, and then you're going to pass this, and then you're going to pass this, and then right after you pass that, there's going to be a road on your left, and you turn on that road, and you keep going, and it was really one of those things that today we would never have. Today you would just have a device that would say, here it is, because the maps are there and you've got it on your phone. But back then, even 20 years ago, we're still in the, oh wait, map doesn't get me there, I'll send you the additional directions.
Yep, I remember that. I used to print out my directions. And I did have a portable GPS, or maybe really transportable. It was a kind of a doohickey. You had to attached via a compact flash card to a pocket PC, and it was quite the and you had to load the maps on manually. It was, you know, it's quite the thing. And I remember going up to the North Shore of Hawaii. Now I know how to get to where I was going, but I was, you know, testing that the technology, and it insisted that I had to turn around because the there was no bridge going over where I wanted to go. And I said, no, that bridge has been there forever, you know, and hasn't washed away or anything. So I crossed the bridge and it's trying to tell me to turn around because I'm in a, you know, I can't get there from here. And it was pretty ridiculous. At that point, I just turned it off.
The first GPS I ever had was, it connected to a Palm M500.
Oh.
And, you know, black and white screen. And I don't think it had any map component. It literally just gave you your location coordinates and how fast you were going. And I remember walking up and down my street in a suburban neighborhood, just being amazed at the GPS coordinates updating to where I was, even though I had no map to see myself on.
Right. Well, at any rate, those are fun. You know, it's amazing how we got around without help in the old days.
Well, we got lost. You know, today, if someone tells you, I'm sorry, I couldn't get here, I got lost, you kind of look at them skeptically.
You look at them like, well, you are, you know, you have some issues.
Yeah. But back then, you were just, you know, you assumed you might get lost. And I remember moving to a new area a few times and just purposely getting lost. I had my boundaries for, you know, if I go past this interstate, I know I've gone too far left,
right,
east. If I go here, I've gone too far south. And you just, you know, wonder where this road goes. I guess I should take it because I have some time now in case, you know, in a few months I have to detour off the highway and here's where I end up and need to know where I'm going, sort of thing.
Well, you know, I still remember when many years ago, this has got to be well over 20 years ago now, I was in Dallas, where, and I was in Dallas like every month, so, you know, I knew the general area okay, and I had to go up to Carrollton, which is, let me think, it is northeast of Dallas on the 635. And so I knew where it was, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't know all the turns and stuff, so and we didn't have GPSs at that point yet, I think. That would come soon in rental cars, at least. In any case, I asked a coworker in Dallas if he could give me, you know, directions to get from where I was going to where I needed to be. And he did. And there are good directions. Oh, okay, I got it. You know, this is pretty simple to get from Irving, Texas to Carrollton. And so I'm going up, and at one point, the exit I was supposed to take was detoured. Because of construction. I mean, it was detoured for miles, right? It's not like in Hawaii where detour is like half a mile or something. And well, so I have to go past it, and I, you know, get off the next turn. I'm not quite sure where I am at this point. So I stop in at a gas station or a Five and Dime or something, 7-Eleven, and ask for directions, and a helpful person there helped me out. And so I got back on the highway or whatever I was going, and I'm driving. I'm thinking, I think I'm doing okay. You know, it's early in the day, got lots of light, shouldn't be a problem. Then I see a sign that says Oklahoma. Like, oh, I must have missed a turn. So I had to turn around. But anyway, I didn't actually get to Oklahoma, but, you know, it's like you're going to go there soon if you just don't turn around, kind of thing.
Well, and I've driven I-35 from Dallas up through Oklahoma, so yeah. It's not too far, but it is jarring. Yeah. You would see that, not expecting
it. Not expecting it, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All right. And, you know, I don't have a lot to talk about today, John, so I'm really looking forward to you helping me with this app. But anyway, the last news item I think you might find interesting. I know I found interesting. I don't use Siri shortcuts much on my iPhone. I think I've used it once or twice, and one of them was to, you know, repeatedly check on where the heck my AirPod Pros were. But that's about it. That's the only thing I really use Siri shortcuts for. And in that case, I was just using a button press. I wasn't even talking to Siri. Just like, where's my AirPod Pro? Where's my AirPod Pro? In about every 10 minutes for several days. But at any rate, one of the things I really wish it had done was it could talk to Google Apps, because it didn't. And apparently now it does. There's a February 6th article on blog.google that says that I don't know the extent of it. I haven't really played with it. But they talk about helpful shortcuts for Google Apps and iOS. And they talk about using apps like Gmail and YouTube and the Google app itself using Siri shortcuts. So I'm kind of looking forward to it, because, I, you know, the two things I'd really like to use it for are Google Maps, although I don't think that's listed in the article, but, you know, might be there. And Google Music, what is that called? Is that called Google Music? Let me look. Which is what I use to play. Oh, it's called Google Play Music, which is what I use to, well, play music when I'm in the car. And I couldn't use Siri voice commands with it. I think we talked about how you could use Google voice commands a couple of months ago in the podcast. But quite frankly, it's not as useful as I hoped it would be. So I'm looking to try this. I don't. Did you have you tried it yet? It says things like you can use a Siri shortcut to search at Google.
I have not. And just looking at what it can do, it basically can just launch the Google app on your phone, and it just doesn't look like it's doing anything more than that.
Yeah,
so,
it looks pretty basic, but it's a start.
Right. Right now, you could probably also say, "Hey Siri, open Google," and it would probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
In fact, let me see what it does. Yeah. Yeah, it's asking me which one I want to open.
Nice. Google Maps. Yeah. Nice. Well, it's a start, you know. It's a start.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a step in the right Google direction.
Yes, it's a googly direction for sure. Okay, so...
So, I see here that you are having issues with one of the apps that I've recommended.
Not issues, I just don't have a mental model for using it. Yeah, I don't know how to use it.
Okay.
That's basically, I'm saying I don't know how to use it. That's what I'm saying. So here's what happened to me, okay? So I and remember, I'm coming from the two note-taking apps I use most are Evernote, and more recently, because Evernote's become so flaky, I've been using Google Keep. So those are the two mental models I have of, you know, mobile app-taking apps. So I bought NoteShelf, and it turns out I got it for free on my Android. So I've got it on Android and I've got it on iOS. And I created a notebook under my notes. And I tried to take a picture of a business card, which I successfully did. And I wanted to add notes to that card, but I can't. So that's number one. How do I do that? And number two, one of the things I frequently do with Google Keep especially is I create a card, a Google Keep, whatever you call it, note, I guess, that has a link to, you know, some article that I want to refer to again. So I did that with an article on, I think, I want to say Forbes. It could be something else. But at any rate, so there was an article I found interesting. It's called, It's Official, Open Plan Offices Are Now the Dumbest Management Fad of All Time. You know, something I agree with. And I saw, I copied it to NoteShelf. And instead of doing what I expected it to do, which was to create a shortcut, you know, a link. No, sorry, it created a link from a NoteShelf card or note or whatever you call it to the app and maybe create a thumbnail. It actually pulled every single page from the article, every single web page from the article, and divided it up into individual pages in NoteShelf. Did I do something wrong? Let's start with that one.
I've never seen that because I've never tried that before. So okay. That's a pretty cool thing that NoteShelf can do. So I think where you're missing the mark on NoteShelf is that NoteShelf is much more analog to a notebook.
Okay.
So all these fancy things about, you know, linking to web pages or, I mean, you can take pictures of business cards and put them in a note or something like that.
I did
but
that.
The idea is you've got a ton of paper versions of things and you want an electronic way to keep them. So I'll give you a couple of examples. So right now on my notes, I have two notebooks that I've been using primarily. One is 2019-2020.
Okay.
Also, it's kind of my year notebook.
Right.
And I have a template on there that is a meeting notes template. So kind of, you know, meeting, attendees, objectives, a place for notes. And then as I'm sitting in a meeting talking with someone, I use my Apple Pencil to kind of jot down whatever things that we're talking about and need to do, that sort of thing. And then I can go back to, you know, any previous meeting that we've had recently and look at my handwritten notes from there. Occasionally I'll take a picture of something and put it in my notebook. So I'm trying to think of where I have an example of that. And you can also type. So for example, you can type your notes out. Another example, I was in a meeting, someone passed out that piece of paper that Todd's looking at that I scanned and I kind of marked up what I thinking about on it. So it really is sort of the paper scrapbook sort of analog. The other thing I use it for is when I have forms that I have to fill out. So when I go in to evaluate an instructor, for example, I have this pre-filled out form and then I can put my notes in it and then I can just export it to PDF and send it to the person. So instead of me printing out a paper evaluation form, writing it up, and then scanning it and sending it back, I have the notes electronically. And if I don't feel like typing them up, I can't actually write a little bit more extemporaneously with this than type. And that's where I see it really feels a good use for me, is when I'm filling out forms or filling out templates of some sort. Because on typing, it's always kind of a hassle to get your cursor exactly where you want it and get the text box the right size and in the right place. Whereas with an Apple Pencil, I can just zoom in, start writing whatever I need to write, zoom back out, go to another part of the form, zoom in, write what I need, zoom back out. So that's what I use it for. I don't use it for kind of the Evernote mentality where I'm just going to throw a bunch of things in there for safekeeping.
Okay.
I actually still use Evernote or OneNote for that.
Okay. And I have that kind of helps me, and you know, I kind of know how I need to think about this. And I have a really dumb question. So, how do you delete a note page?
Tap on the pages over in the right, and then choose Edit, and then tap on the page you want, and hit the trash can icon.
Huh.
If you're in a notebook.
So I'm in a notebook. But I don't see the individual pages because I'm on an iPhone, not an iPad. I guess I could go to an iPad. But
okay, yeah.
Okay, so
I need to... mine, it's that, it looks like a little pane.
Okay, okay. I think I have to go to an iPad to manage this, which is okay, and it's, you know. All right. Oh, wait, I see it now. I have to tap the pages icon in the upper right, and then what? Then what do I do? Mm-hmm. Then all pages.
Up and hit the little trash can.
Hit the little trash can. Huh. Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, and you can do multiple pages too. So I can tap. Just going to delete all of these because it's kind of not making sense. Oh, it was Ink Magazine, by the way. Okay. Yay. All right, so this has been, you know, how to use Note Shelf with Dr. John Westfall.
Yeah, mobile view spec support.
So I really need to think about the mental metaphor model of Note Shelf and not think of it as a replacement for something like Google Keep or Evernote. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, it's not a replacement for your scrapbook, it's a replacement for your notebook.
Okay.
If you're thinking about this in terms of analog technologies.
Okay. And the other thing I want to let you know, and we'll continue with this tech support perhaps in another podcast, is I bought the journaling app. No, I didn't buy it. It's not a purchase. It's a subscription. I didn't subscribe, but I downloaded the journaling app that you use, which I think is called Day One. I don't know where I put it though. Maybe I just put it on my iPad. I don't see it on my iPhone. But I kind of looked at it. I didn't even sign up yet because I really hate signing up for stuff. But I did download it, and I'm thinking about using it. I bought Note Shelf, thinking, oh, maybe I could use that instead. But we'll take a look at it.
You could create a notebook that would be a daily journal, and then you just write in there, draw in there, or do whatever you want to do.
I might do that. And I should note that I'm still trying to fuss with Notion as an Evernote replacement, because that's kind of the goal, is to figure out what to do when Evernote goes away, because I don't think it's doing too well. But I will say this, Notion, which is at Notion.io, has a ton of metadata in meta tags that it creates, including ones you can add yourself. They call them properties. It's almost too busy for me. So I'm really not sure how I want to use it. Quite frankly, I've been using Google Keep more lately, again. And I've always been a pretty big fan of Google Keep. It's not quite as powerful in many ways as Evernote, but it is far simpler and more stable in my experience, at least. So that's kind of where I've been going with that. So, you know, I've been playing a lot of note type apps lately. I still haven't done what Sven and Chris recommended, which is, you know, use OneNote mobile version more with the Apple Pencil in portrait mode. I think you told me that too. So yeah. I still haven't made that transition because I use OneNote. I appreciate it. You know, I recommend it to folks for certain kinds of tasks. I just don't like it. That's weird. I can't explain it. I want to like it. I just don't. It's kind of like with cats, you know? I like animals of all kinds. With cats and me, I don't know. We just... we're just not a thing.
Don't worry, they don't like you either.
Yeah, that's what I think too. That's the whole point. You know, dogs I've never met before will come up to me and kind of, you know, bark hello, and you know, it's really nice. But cats, not so much.
Yeah, that's just cats.
All right, what do you have? I see you have some kind of super secret thing.
One last thing, yeah. So I have a super secret project that I'll be talking more about throughout the next few months, but it's super secret right now. But it's got me thinking a little bit about technology I use that is not for intended purpose. So using a piece of software or hardware that you wouldn't, you know, the manufacturer did not think you would ever actually do. So, yeah. For example, a couple of common ones that I see in the real world are people who use Excel as a form of kind of a light database.
Oh, that's endemic. So,
yeah, you know, hooking up different, you know, VLOOKUPs and matches and functions and all that so that you can basically use one Excel workbook as your database. That's not too uncommon, but it's definitely not, I think, what Microsoft intended for Excel. That's why they had Access. And the second one is PowerPoint for laying out posters or print media, which is fairly common in
I've never seen that.
In academia and other places. Yeah, so for example, when you do an academic poster today, it's typically laid out in PowerPoint because you can set the PowerPoint slide to be as big as you want in inches, and then you can export to you know, PNG file or whatever you need it to be, high res enough to go to print.
So Microsoft would prefer you use Microsoft Publish, but you know, then you have to learn it and everything, and everybody knows how to use PowerPoint, so I can see that.
Well, and the Publisher tools, compared to PowerPoint, you know, Publisher has really not received any updates since 2003, 2007.
Really?
It got the ribbon. That's about it. Yeah, Publisher doesn't have a ton of, you know, the same features like you would see on the Office apps.
I gave up on it years ago, so yeah.
Yeah, it sort of feels like it got stuck about the time you gave up on it. PowerPoint, the tools for grouping and aligning are a lot more
absolutely,
and the smart apps that it provides on Mac are actually really nice if you're trying to create something that's visually appealing. And
yeah,
that might be a PowerPoint, but it might also be a poster that you would print out or a flyer or something like that. So I those are the two that I see a lot, and I'm just kind of curious if you can think some examples of off the shelf or off note or off label. That's the medical
off
term.
Label?
Off label sort of for your favorite technologies or things that you own.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I would call it off label, but there are some products out there. The one I'm thinking about is called Esri StoryNap. And Esri, as you might know, is a huge GIS company. They're probably the market leader in enterprise GIS, geospatial information systems, GIS. And I've been kind of maybe shocked is not the right word. So, like I said, they have this thing called story maps, which you know you tell a narrative using maps, which is very common if you're doing GIS work. But what surprises me is I've seen people starting to use it to build web pages that have nothing to do with maps, using story maps or presentations even. Yeah, I've seen people do like presentations using story maps instead of PowerPoint or, you know, some other slide presentation tool. And the thing that drives me crazy about it is, because story maps is not designed as a one to many presentation tool. In other words, like a professor standing in front of a class, of, you know, one person speaking and many people watching and listening. It's really meant to be a more lean forward experience and a lean back experience. And so they present these, what should be on a PowerPoint or some other slide deck, a keynote slide deck, and they have like 52 lines of text on the screen, which is completely unreadable, you know, unless you're standing right up at the screen. So it's not only inappropriate tool, it's basically most people don't know how to make a presentation. You know, they don't know what of the visual metaphors of a presentation should be, and they don't know they don't appreciate what it's like to be on the other side of the they just want to make something to show because they have to do a presentation, and they really don't care if you can read it or see it or if it makes sense. You know, from the presentation, you know, types, archetypes that we've developed in our heads over the decades. And so that one drives me crazy. I mean, I know why they do it. It's easy, and you know, they use it for other things, so they use it for that. But it's driving me a little nuts, and I want to put a stop to it, in at least where I work.
You want to just end the insanity?
Yeah, you know, I want.
Yeah, so I.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know.
That is an interesting point, and it's interesting when you have a tool that is designed with one idea. Sometimes you can move it into another realm,
right?
And it seems to be fine on the small
Yeah.
And then you take it to a large screen and you realize this was a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like using Excel as a database, right? Which I think you might remember, John, many years ago when we were Microsoft MVPs, we were getting some presentation by Excel product manager. And I remember, you know, he started it by saying, I'm going to talk to you about the most used database in the world, Microsoft Excel. And, you know, we all kind of chuckled because, you know, we knew it was true. But I guess it's still true.
Yeah. And that's kind of crazy when you really think about it, that there's no other product that, well, I would assume there's no other product that's as equally as deployed and as versatile.
Right.
But you bring up a good point with the... something that's designed for authoring one thing for another. And web pages are definitely one of those sorts of things that we don't often think about. But I've seen people use a lot of strange things for their web pages. And if you think about it, Markdown was sort of developed for web pages when people didn't want to be bothered with getting something that was more formal of a web page editor.
Yep.
And the same thing with typewriting and typesetting. Have something that was not as, ornate. Go back to something more simplistic.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the other thing, right? Is using Microsoft Word for publishing hard copy documentation. Microsoft Word is not a publishing tool. It is there's a distinction I don't think many people appreciate. It is not a publishing tool, at least for many of us, or without some help. I know O'Reilly uses a publishing tool, but they've got some very smart people that, you know, take care of the formatting. But what happens is I see people doing write justification on non-current text all the time. And so they've got these giant spaces between words because they think that text should be left and right justified, like, you know, you see in a printed textbook or a novel or something. But the kerning in Word just isn't smart enough to make that look good. And it drives me nuts because it becomes so difficult to read. But yeah, small but common. Oh, the other one. Okay, now you got me ranting. People who grew up, for people of a certain age, basically people my age or older, grew up being taught that you put two spaces after a period. And this is, again, part of the, you know, the hard copy mentality, where you want it to be obvious when a sentence ends, the period, you know, because you had monospaced fonts, typewriters in the old days. And you put two spaces so it's easy to see where a sentence ends and a new sentence begins. We don't need to do that anymore. But I know people who still insist that you put two spaces. I say, you know, Word, when it does do its kerning, which is not perfect, it does shrink that space. So there's no need to put two spaces. But anyway, and I think didn't the APA finally change their style guide to say you only need one space? I mean, that's recent, like within the last year, I think.
Well, they changed it now that it has to only be one space. We've had the option to use one space for a while in APA, but it now has become mandatory only use one space.
Yay.
Which everyone using APA under 35 goes, okay, why was this even an issue? And everyone over 45 is militantly angry about it, seems.
Oh, those people.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's not really an appreciation for why we did it in the first place. It's purely become I had to do it, so you have to do it sort of thing, even though the technology has changed.
Well, you know, but the appropriate thing to say to those people, right? Okay, boomer.
Well, I could do that, but,
I am a boomer, by the way, but I will take no offense.
All right, yeah. Well, then I'll just say it to you, and I won't say it to anyone else. But you tend to be on the side of technology that's more malleable than other boomers. So this is one of those things where I've been basically developing for a tool that you and I know well, and I'll keep secret for a little while longer.
Okay.
Sort of off-label usages, and I'm beginning to flesh those out, and it's really kind of a lot of fun to think about a tool that you may have thought of as highly specialized, that's sort of a, you know, laser precision, do it for this task and only this task, as more of a Swiss Army knife that you can use to speed up a lot of your common tasks.
Alrighty, so Oh, well, that's interesting. I just turned on something that I didn't want to turn on, but that's okay. Let's just pull the batteries on this thing. So I want to show John are two things before I let him go. You know, I was not a fan of the super flat mouses. And I've been using kind of a normal shape but smaller Logitech mouse for my portable mouse needs at work, for example. But the other day, I had a meeting with a couple of Microsofties, and I noticed they were using, I guess it was a Surface mouse. So I thought, I do see the use case for it now, because the way I'm using it, I'm using or carrying my mouse nowadays, is I actually just stick it in my pocket when I go to a meeting. You know, so I'm obviously walking, I'm not driving. So I just stick my mouse in my pocket and I carry my notebook. You know, no case, just a notebook, and stick my mouse in the pocket, and off I go to a meeting, and I plop down and I do what I need to do. And the Logitech mouse I've been using, which is a small travel mouse, is wonderful, but it's kind of fat, and it's kind of a pain to just kind of stick it in my pocket. It's uncomfortable. So I said, that Surface mouse thing is really flat. Now, I didn't want to buy the Surface mouse itself because it's kind of expensive, but I did buy something called a Microsoft Modern Mobile Mouse, which I'm showing mm-hmm. John, and is way thinner. Yeah. So I think it's going to be way more, usable to carry around in my pocket. So I'm going to do that. You know, one thing I did notice is kind of weird about the mouse. There's no on-off switch. You pull the little plug and it automatically goes on, which is kind of interesting. It does have a Bluetooth pairing, button, but there's no on-off switch like most mice. Like at the bottom of my Logitech, there's a it's green when it's in use and red when it's not. I had to pull the batteries. So it's got two AAA batteries. Mm-hmm. So I had to pull the batteries to turn it off, which is kind of annoying, but that's okay. Anywho, I will put this back in so it doesn't turn on again. And we'll try that. Now, the other thing I wanted to show John, just because it's amusing, one of my oldest friends told me I have an office supply addiction gene, which I do believe is true, and he is a biologist, so we'll say he's right. And I got this, John. I thought you'd be amused, and I thought I'd mention to folks.
I saw that, and I was wondering if your budget situation is so bad you cannot afford to
Staples?
Buy supplies.
Well, I'm thinking about retiring in a number of years, and I thought, well, if I don't have to buy Staples anymore, I'd save a lot of money. Well, maybe not that much. But anyway, I bought a stapleless stapler. And so it can handle mm-hmm. up to about 5 sheets of paper. What it does is basically it punches a hole and folds the paper that it punched in a very tiny hole. And it folds that paper over so that the sheets stick together. So I thought, oh, that's awfully clever. Because mm-hmm. most of my stapling needs are, two or three pages, really. When I do need to staple... Quite frankly, my stapler is always breaking on me, so I thought, I'll give this a try. I think it's about $10. It's from Swingline, so, well-known stapling company, so I'm not driving Swingline out of business. It's just, they just don't have the, what's that called, the razor and razor blade. Now you just buy the razor, no blade.
Yeah. And it's unfortunately white and not red.
Yeah, I think there are other colors, but that was the cheapest.
It can't be a perfect product.
The last thing I thought I'd show you is I bought this kind of like this keychain. It's not really a keychain. Kind of like a carbiner, however you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's a little tiny lightning and USB-A on one side, lightning the other. If you just need to carry around a charging cable, and I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You can just put the carbiner, on like a backpack thing or whatever, and there you go. So
yep, I have two of those.
Yeah.
In black.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to work all that well, though. It only charges in certain ports.
Yeah. Mine I've had for about 4 years, 5 years, and I haven't really used them that much. They're kind of my emergency lightning cables.
Yeah.
I throw them in when I travel, but I use them when I travel.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
I
should probably read the documentation for this mouse since I only just now realized it has no off switch. But in any case, this has been MobileViews podcast number 317, and we will talk to you next time.